You are listening to 94.9 Zoomix Radio, powered by Youth, broadcasting live from East Boston and streaming on the web at zoomix.org. This is What's Up Eastie. I'm your host, Kanan. Today on the show, we're going to be discussing the Suffolk Downs development, and we have on the line one of the Impact Advisory Group members. We're going to be talking to him in detail about the development and how the community can get involved. We also have a couple of other guests. So first, Alex DeFronso. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Kanan, thank you for having me back on the show.
Great to have you. Mary Ellen?
Hi, Kanan.
Great to have you, Mary Ellen. And we have Magdalena Ayed.
A pleasure to be here, as always.
Magdalena.
Hi, Mary Ellen. Hi, Alex.
Wonderful. We're all on. So let's get started here. So as I said, we're going to talk about the Suffolk Downs development that's happening in the Suffolk Downs. And it is going to be a long-term development. However, the community engagement part is somewhat urgent because there are some deadlines coming right up. We're going to learn about what the development is and what its impact is and how we can all get involved. So let's get started. Alex, you're on the Impact Advisory Group for this project, right?
Yes, that's right.
So what has it been like so far? What can you tell us about the development?
Sure. So HYM Investment Group bought the Suffolk Downs parcel last year, and they have, over the course of the last several months, gone through a community engagement process. And they've said they've attended somewhere upwards of 150 community meetings the last few months to present their vision for what they hope to do on the site, which is a mixed-use development. And because of the size of the project, it's subject to Article 80 review with the City of Boston, which means that the Boston Planning and Development Agency assembles an impact advisory group. And part of the IAG's role is to figure out how to mitigate the impacts of the project and to represent the neighborhood's voice. So there's a few deadlines coming up for public input on the project, and I hope during the show we can make people aware of what they are.
Definitely. So you said mixed use. What does that mean?
It means they want to do a lot of different things on the site. So they're looking to do commercial development, like office space, to have residential so that people of different age groups can live on the site. They want to do retail development. So they want to build out a friendly sort of atmosphere for people to live and shop. And that all is going to take place on the Suffolk Downs parcel.
I see. What's the development going to be like? Tell us. It's pretty big, isn't it? It's how many acres is it?
I think it's about 160 acres total.
Mm-hmm.
And about two-thirds of that is in the City of Boston. The other third is in Revere.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's the largest contiguous site open for development in the entire city. So it's a huge project. They plan to build over 11 million square feet mm-hmm. over the duration of the build-out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not really anything like it that's happened in the recent past. It's just such a huge parcel of land to build.
So the mere size of it is a big source of excitement. And there is another reason for all this excitement around this project, right? I'm thinking about a certain bid, the Amazon bid.
Yeah, that seems to get a lot of coverage and a lot of talk. So the City of Boston, along with like some 300 other municipalities across the country, responded to a request for proposals that Amazon put out earlier this year, looking to build a second headquarters somewhere in North America. So they have their headquarters in Seattle, Washington, and they want to build out another site somewhere in the United States. So Boston's proposal that they submitted focused heavily on the Suffolk Downs site as a really good place for Amazon to look at to become a major tenant. And if they were to pick Boston and move here, they're saying they would bring as many as 50,000 jobs and that they pay an average salary of $100,000. So the dynamics of what that would do to the neighborhood would be profound in many ways. It would have positive impacts. It would also pose a lot of risk to the neighborhood and put a lot of pressure on housing costs. So there's pros and cons to the potential of Amazon coming here. I think overall it probably would be a good thing for the neighborhood, but nobody knows for sure where they're going to pick and what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. And what they're going to pick and what they're going to do has something to do with what we tell them too, right? That's why the Impact Advisory Group is there.
Think HYM has developed two different plans. So one has to focus on a larger commercial build-out, which would happen if Amazon selects Boston and decides that they want to move to Suffolk Downs. And then one has a larger residential component. In either case, the IAG will be there to provide community input on what East Boston wants to see happen with the site. And the IAG's responsibility is to make sure down either path that it's a responsible development and that the impacts that community faces are mitigated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you mentioned a couple of big positive impacts, and then we will discuss. You said there will be some negative impacts as well. You mentioned the pressure on housing. There may be others as well. And before we discuss the impact in some detail and the job of the IAG itself and how the process works and all that, Mary Ellen Magdalena, did you have any questions for Alex or something to add to the introduction?
Well, Alex gave a very good description of the possibilities up there. When I met with Tom O'Brien, I brought up to him some of my concerns around open space development on the site.
Tom O'Brien being the head of HYM, which is the consulting group that's doing the development. Yeah. Thank you.
Right.
Go ahead.
And the connections to other open areas in the community, such as Belisle Marsh, the connection to the Greenway, because the Greenway is now heading in its expansion projects towards Suffolk Downs. I also raised issues about transportation, because it's really good to have two MBTA stops on the property, one in Beachmont, one in Suffolk Downs.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm concerned also about the C1 highway, which for many years, I think since the 70s, has been declared a corridor of critical concern by the state. And so everyone knows how backed up that in historical ways it's always been backed up, but now it's, and then it lessened a little bit with the TED, and now it's backed up all over again, both with commuters from the North Shore and people who are heading toward the beaches and toward New Hampshire and Maine, et cetera. So getting on and off that site in cars or trucks or whatever, that to me is a great concern to the people who live in East Boston, but also in Revere and in Chelsea. So Tom's response at the time, I met with him in the early summer, was that he was cognizant of it and would, include an approach to C1 from the development in the planning. And I also mentioned, even though the Chelsea Creek is across two lanes of the highway on the Chelsea side, connecting to that as well, because in my opinion, having open space to serve places like East Boston and Revere, which are densely populated, is very important. He was very positive and very forward-looking in his ability to address the issues of connecting to open space, creating open space on the project, and addressing the transportation issue on the highway. So I felt confident that he already knew a lot of the issues that I was bringing up. So
can you confirm that, Alex?
Other people, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'm talking too much.
I've heard representatives from HYM say that they do intend to, if the East Boston Greenway is able to reach the Suffolk Downs site, that they want to keep it open and accessible all the way through, so that people could take it all the way to Revere Beach potentially in the future.
Right.
So Mary Ellen talked about two things. One is the concern around transportation and the congestion that could result from that because of the increase in population. And the second one was more like a wish list to the increasing open space Which, I mean, maybe it's, it could be seen as a concern as well because the density of population is increasing, she said. So two different things. I think the Greenway part speaks a little bit to the open space. Is there more open space being added?
He described building in open space within the development. For instance, right in the middle of the track there, there's that water feature, which he said he will keep and expand. And underneath the Suffolk Downs land, there's water, Sales Creek, and it goes from the Belleau Reservation under the land and all the way over to the Chelsea River. And some years ago, a group of women from East Boston and Chelsea got together, and we sued a developer over across at the Edgar Hill site because he wanted to bring in a lot of trucks. He said it was water-oriented freight, but in fact, it was air freight that was coming in and brought in from the airport on trucks and taken from the site on trucks, not on the water. So at that point, a lot of us had issues with that. Coming in and going out by water is one thing, but adding to the traffic with huge trucks is another. So the congestion on C1 is backed up every single morning going into the tunnel. Now, that's compounded by all of the traffic, number one, that's coming from the North Shore over the viaduct and from the airport, and it's especially bad in the morning because of the commuter hours. So there are people work, including the Port Authority and DOT. They're working on trying to find a way to ease the congestion coming from the north and from the airport.
Sounds like you've raised that concern, Marielle. It sounds like you've raised the concern clearly about transportation congestion, and it sounds like HYM has heard the concern and is aware of it.
And they are aware of it.
Which is good. And my question was, on the open space side, was there going to be any additional open space? I think you spoke to that as well.
Yes.
Around the Kidney Pond or whatever it's called, there'll be more open space besides just extending the Greenway.
The people who come to the development, if in fact there is a residential component, they need to have open space there as well. And of course, it's the size of the development when they attract if the retail and the business attract people from outside, there's a necessity to have open space for all the people that use that development, who either live there, work there, or visit there.
Magdalene, did you have a question or a comment?
I second, what both Alex and Mary Ellen have been saying. Obviously, I just want to make a distinction. So their commitment is 40 acres of open space, mm-hmm. from what I read, and I've heard Tom O'Brien speak and his colleagues. And I just want to make sure that we define the difference between open space and green space. Some of that open space obviously won't be green space. And as environmental advocates and activists, we always try to push for as much environmental conservation as we can. And I'm glad people like Alex are on the IAG, obviously, very well-versed, extremely professional folks in the neighborhood. My concern is a little bit more towards the process. So the IAG processes, mm-hmm. the impact advisory groups, are in themselves sometimes flawed just by nature. This community is to some extent very removed. I mean, these folks, from HYM and a lot of these consultant companies are very well versed. It's what they do day to day. So they have an advantage over us. So for us, I mean, obviously people like Mary Ellen, who have so much knowledge, are incredible. We would need like 50 more Mary Ellens, to really help the neighborhood understand and decipher. So a lot of this IAG process has all these documents that are really hard for people to decipher. So that's not even speaking about a percentage of the population that it has language barriers and might not have the skill level to really understand mm-hmm. what it means to actually read an impact, document or mitigation document. So my concern about the process, and obviously we can't change it now, but I think, we really need to push for as much and involve as many groups, local groups as we can, and unite as one front and really come to them as sort of like, the keeper, saying this is our neighborhood and we're happy you're here and we're happy this incredible opportunity is here to redevelop this amazing amount of land. But, they have an advantage over us mm-hmm. in terms of technical capacity. And so we really have to make sure we're there at the forefront. I mean, Alex is doing what he can. Mary Ellen and all
IAG
these folks.
IAG is volunteer work, right?
Yeah, it's volunteer work. These folks don't get paid. A lot of times they can't attend. I mean, we all have families. I mean, I was kind of glad I wasn't picked because I'm like, oh, God, if I had to go to another evening meeting, I probably wouldn't be able to make it. So I therefore wouldn't be able to represent, you know, the community as best as I can during the day.
Right.
You know, but I'm glad Alex is there and other folks. But the point being is that we want to push for as much. When they say open space, let's really go back to them and say, okay, what do you mean exactly by open space? How much is that doing? How much flood mitigation are you actually doing? Because, you know, Mary Ellen mentioned, obviously, the transportation congestion. If you look at the other side by the marsh, which, by the way, this site is next to an AECEC, an Area of Critical Environmental Concern, which is part of the Romney Marsh, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This Romney Marsh actually does not have an approved master plan. But you know, the average person probably might not know that or remember that if they read it in the past. That's a little bit of sort of a red flag saying, okay, let's take a step back here. So they want to now push forward some development, initial development, right? I think Alex can probably speak a lot more to that. And so the MEPA process, which is called the Massachusetts, the Environmental
Policy Act?
Right, Policy Act has to approve the environmental aspect.
Right.
And it's not being overrided, but it's being pushed a little quicker. So what exactly does that mean for mm-hmm. us? And
for example, MEPA has a community meeting coming up.
Right, and the community meeting is at the same time as a bunch of other meetings that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, that,
okay.
Again, it's a process issue that
I hear you.
About.
So yeah. It's a process. There's a process concern. So we need to be extra, extra vigilant in terms of making sure that the community's concerns are heard and propagated to the developer.
Exactly.
Okay, so hopefully, you know, this medium will be one such
yes,
process.
Yes, thankfully, yeah.
And there can be more as well. Alex, you've been listening. What do you think?
The project is moving through the permitting process very quickly, and I think it is important for people that, especially abutters that live close to the site, to learn as much about it as they possibly can, because there's a limited window of time to put information in and give the BPDA comments before they start moving forward. So HYM, the developer of the site and the owner of the site, has submitted two different project notification forms. One is the master plan, which encompasses what they want to do with the entire site, and the public comment period for that is closing on January 19th. So it's in the very near future that people have a chance to look at what they hope to do with the entire site
mm-hmm.
and say what they would like to see happen and what their input is.
Right.
And then they have an even closer deadline, which is for the phase one build out on the project. So they want to start right away with two commercial buildings that are 520,000 square feet total. And the public comment period for us, the neighborhood, to give our feedback to the city for that part of the project closes on January 10th. So it's 1 week away. And the reason that they're moving forward so quickly with this is because part of what the city put in their proposal to Amazon for the second headquarters is that we would be able to provide them with 500,000 square feet of office space by 2019. So they really want to move quickly on it so that we can...
2019 is next year.
Stay true.
Right.
That's right. In less than a year, they want to build out 500,000 square feet of space on the site.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important for people to... I don't think that the neighborhood really knows how quickly this is moving forward from the people I've talked to anyway.
Right. And that's assuming we win the bid, right?
Please look.
If we don't win the Amazon bid, then they will have gained an advantage.
They'll have to find other commercial developers to fill those buildings.
Right.
Right. Okay, so Alex just talked about January 19th and January 10th as two deadlines, 19th for the master plan and 10th for the first couple of buildings that are going to be built with the 2019 deadline. There is also something happening on the 8th of January. Magdalena, you talked about the MEPA process.
Yeah.
There is a community meeting that MEPA is doing. This is specifically about environment. It's on the 8th of January. It's also happening in Suffolk Downs.
Right. I believe it was supposed to happen this week, but they postponed it.
Postponed because of the storm. Yeah. So.
And I was about to miss that as well. I think also the notification, you know, process. I'm glad that you're providing this medium for people who are tuning in, and we can probably also use social media after this to make sure that people know when mm-hmm. and where it's being held and what kinds of you know, things are going to be presented.
Yeah, we will share the information about the upcoming deadlines and how people can provide comments, all the URLs for people to go. Yep.
But it's also the responsibility of both the city and the developer to develop a way for people to communicate how they feel. For it's a complicated process for people who have never had to participate in a comment period and write letters to the Secretary of Environmental Affairs or to the mayor or to whatever group is judging it. So for the Meet the Meeting, it's very important for people to have the information about how to communicate with the Secretary of Environmental Affairs. And there should be a whole community process, communications process of how people can submit their comments. It gets very complicated because you have to know to whom you're writing besides the secretary, the people who are underneath him overseeing the specific permitting process. And there should be a simple way for people to access, for instance, via the computer. When we had to organize responses to NEPA in the past around airport or highway issues, we did it on a voluntary basis and reached out to people via community groups that we knew about and that were interested in the issue. And we gave all the information out about to whom to address it, how to do it, what the deadlines were, and we put in bullets that comprised major issues to address, whether it was asking people to just write a simple sentence about each issue. The idea is to create a volume of responses from people and hopefully show that people understood what was happening, what the issues were as far as NEPA was concerned. So in my opinion, I think that people should have established, meaning the movers and the shakers at the VRA, or the environmental department of the state, or the particular developer. They should establish a communications central kind of place where people had the information at the touch of a button on the computer and were able to immediately send their comments, whether they were simple ones or more complex approaches to the issues. So with that not in place and the one deadline coming up this week or next week, I think it's a really crucial time to establish a communications network so that people will be able to respond from home about the issues.
So you're raising the point about how simple and easy it should be for people to engage so that they don't have to figure out a whole lot of things. It shouldn't involve hunting down some complex information. So,
and that's usually what has happened. You have to go on the computer and research. Well, I mean, unless community groups that are existing like Air Inc. or the Greenway Council, unless we provide it to our list of our membership list and say, here's the person to write to, here's the address, here's an outline which has bullets in it of major issues that you can just write a sentence about to simplify it or expand on those bullets. And that's important because it's very hard sometimes, in my opinion, to research who the people are, what is the address, and what is the time limit, and what specifically are the concerns that need to be addressed by the community.
So we're playing catch-up. I just wanted to add, I know you probably want to move on to another question, but we're playing catch-up with the knowledge about the actual site as a community.
Right.
Because it's been so long that, you know, it's been just, you know, this, you know, thoroughbred racetrack. And so that's a very sort of specific use.
Right.
So now it's so complex. So, you know, I agree with Mary Ellen. So the good thing is, because I do want to, you know, give that hope, is that we do have a number of groups in East Boston who can coordinate. And actually, after this interview, we really should coordinate a little bit more closer to figure out, you know, who can draft a letter, you know, how are we going to disseminate it so that we can, in terms of the mitigation, we can really be more at an advantage and have another tool for us to say, okay, these are the exact points that, you know, we're concerned about, and how are you going to address them?
Sure. So you're also speaking to a simpler communication method where we can convey our needs or
exactly.
concerns about the risk
yes.
and ideas for mitigation. So,
you know, a person who has done this for two community groups that I know of is Chris Markey. He organized responses to NEPA several times now community-wide and was able to elicit a great number of responses from community people, and it was all done around the computer. I know I'm oversimplifying it because I'm not computer knowledgeable, really, but Chris really knows how to do it, and we did it on a smaller scale than the development at Suffolk Downs, and I do believe that the developer would be interested in participating in establishing a communication system, and the city, VRA, should be interested in doing so. So, and that it has to happen fast in
right.
order to
yeah.
to reach the deadline for the 10th.
Good point, Mary Ellen. But, you know, when we come back, we're going to talk more about the risks and what kind of mitigation are possible, and of course we'll pick up on this communication concern that both Magdalena and Mary Ellen have raised, and I'm sure Alex has something to add there as well. You're listening to WZMRLP. This is Zoomix Radio. This is What's Up Eastie. I'm your host, Kanan, and my guests are Magdalena Ayed, who's the director of Harbor Keepers, and Mary Ellen Welch, who's a long-term community activist in the neighborhood, and Alex DeFranco, who is the director of Pierce Park Sailing Center, and Alex is also on the Impact Advisory Group for the Suffolk Downs Development. Okay, let's pick up on that communication concern, Alex. There are ways, MEPA, for example, has set up a way to receive comments. Is there one place where people can go for that? There is a website for Suffolk Downs Development, suffolkdownsredevelopment.com. Is that one place where people can go and provide these comments, or do you think that we're going to have to deal with the complexity of reaching out to different bodies and providing feedback, you know, through all these different channels?
The one centralized place where people should go to provide public comment is on the formerly VRA, now BPDA's website, which is bostonplans.org.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just search online for BPDA Suffolk Downs, you'll see the project page that they have set up. So you can submit your comments directly to the BRA staff at the City of Boston through that website. That's the easiest way to do it.
I will share all this on whatsupeastie.com. But for people who may not be going on websites and things, just to reiterate what Alex just said, bostonplans.org/projects/development-projects/suffolk-downs-face-1. That's the URL.
Listen, that's complicated.
I know it is. Totally, it is. But that's why I'm going to share it.
There should be an address that you can write. I write notes usually. And so there should be a place where someone and a person to address the issues too at the VRA. So there should be a real address.
Letters.
Yeah. So
yeah.
What is it?
So I don't know how to pronounce his name. I know Alex might know. Tim, I can't pronounce the name. It starts with a W, right, Alex? So there is an assigned sort of project manager on this from the BPDA that
can
be contacted.
And then an address including a zip code. Otherwise, they won't deliver it.
So I think Alex was just about to say something. The name, is Tim Sheryansky.
Yes.
Yeah. So Alex, what were you going to say?
If you don't want to submit comments online, you can call Tim Zerwinski, who's the person that's been assigned as the project manager for the BPDA for this project. His phone number is 617-918-5303, or you can write him, Tim Zerwinski, at the Boston Planning and Development Agency, which is 1 City Hall Square, Boston, Massachusetts, 02201.
Well, that's good. Now, that has to be disseminated so that everybody can have that information. Because people, you have a listening audience, I understand, but there are a lot of people out there who are not tuned in to Zoomix Radio, and they need to find it somewhere. somebody, they should take an ad in the Times, I don't know, broadcast it at all the community meetings.
We can certainly use social media. I mean, most of us who are working in different organizational capacities
right.
have a social media presence and websites, even websites like WhatsApp East and, I just thought of this. Maybe the IAGs, especially a big IAG like this, really important one, can even just, develop a really simple website and post information, meeting minutes that people could just click on, blah, 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 blah.
This is a big enough project that, they're all volunteer workers.
And the
website would take some funding as well to do.
It would.
But maybe that's a feedback point for you, Alex, and if you take it back to the developer and see if they can allocate some funds
right.
for someone to do that work, and even on that redevelopment website, Suffolk Downs redevelopment website, that may be helpful.
Maybe a community page, right?
Right.
An idea.
So just so listeners know, all the information that's coming up here, you may be finding it hard to jot down, but it will be available on whatsapeastie.com along with the recording of the show, and that will include how you can provide feedback on the computer, as Mary Ellen says.
That's great.
All right, so maybe we can switch to talking about the impacts, and we were starting to address what the negative impacts may be, and Mary Ellen already mentioned transportation congestion, and I think we were starting to talk about open space as well. Magdalena, something from your perspective?
Right. So, in terms of the environmental aspect and the opportunities to really improve the environment, I think it'll be really important for them to really lay out and clarify, what their intention is in terms of improving those environmental areas. So the pond that Mary Ellen was referring to that's currently right now within the racetrack in the middle part, which is actually, I believe, part of Sales Creek. I'm not 100% sure. So they have talked about some, I do want to second what Mary Ellen said and Alex as well, that Tom O'Brien, the managing partner, the owner of the site, one of the managing partners, I think is really forward looking. He's really innovative in terms of he's a great relationship builder, I have to say, very, intelligent man who listens. And I think that's an advantage when you have someone of, that kind of power and influence.
They are few and far between.
I felt the same thing. And he's very approachable. I mean, most folks who are leading any efforts, community leaders, can feel free to actually reach out to him and express any of those concerns. So that's a big plus.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's a whole team behind him. There's, I think, 6 different consulting agencies between the BPDA, STOS, consulting, and other, consulting groups that are sort of dealing with different issues that are really consulting him as he goes along and develops his site. So, but in terms of the environmental aspect, we should really hone in on Bella Marsh.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, this site is landlocked, so they don't have direct access to the water on either side. So they don't have access to the Chelsea River, and they don't have direct access to the Bella Marsh or inlet, because
mm-hmm.
there's, Bennington Street, which is, I believe, a highway, right? Isn't that part of
Yes, it is.
Right.
Highway.
Yeah. And it is an evacuation route, and it is a source of flooding, but they have mentioned, and they've actually done renderings, and if you look at their presentations, they have a keen interest in assuring that there's improvements to the environment. So we just have to kind of ride with that and really push for as much as we can. And right now, it is a negotiation point, essentially. Where
mm-hmm.
the community, if they come back with us, to us and say, okay, this is what we're planning to sort of redevelop and improve, we can say, no, that's not enough. Here's what we're proposing.
Right.
Increase the acreage. Instead of making it sort of hardscape open space out of the 40 acres, if you're making 35 acres hardscape and 10, or 5, let's just improve the amount of, ability for us to actually enjoy green space.
And also
really
soak
beneficial.
Up the rainwater if there's any extreme flooding.
Absolutely. I mean, you do have to abide by environmental regulations, as Alex was said.
Mm-hmm.
They're right now undergoing permitting, processes. So they do have to improve stormwater drainage. I think the city of Boston, with its climate action plan, I think will be right there, assuring that, that there is an improvement to the drainage.
Is the city of Boston, Boston plans, BPDA is involved. Is the Climate Ready Boston part of the Environment Department involved?
Alex, are they? I mean, I'm assuming they would be, but maybe Alex might know more.
So they have to file for permits from all sorts of different state and municipal agencies.
Right.
And if you The documents are available on the Boston Plan site. It's a like 460-page filing that they sent to NEPA. And they do talk extensively about mitigating the impacts of stormwater, the potential for surge, the changes in climate over the course of the next 150 years. The 40 acres of green space that they talk about is actual open green space. It doesn't count impermeable surfaces or the sidewalks around buildings or anything like that.
I see.
So my perception, what Tom O'Brien, Doug Manns, other people at HYM have presented is that this actually is overall going to improve the way that water is managed on the site from how it exists right now. And overall, actually, I think given the amount of asphalt that's on the site right now that had historically been used for parking, the impermeable surfaces on the entire site are probably about the same or actually less by the time that the project is done. I think one of the things that it will be really important for the community to look at is how the greenway is connected through the site and also how Sales Creek is connected to Belle Isle Marsh. Because right now you don't really have the option if you're a pedestrian to get from the Suffolk Down site to Belle Isle. We have the Blue Line track.
But Tom is looking at that. He already knew it at the beginning of the summer that that was a critical connection to make. And it was my impression he had some specific ideas, but they will have to be, you know, enhanced in the discussion with the community and with the city.
So are we saying that in the long run, given the climate change concerns, you know, we're talking about several feet of sea level rise by 2070 and whatnot, are we saying that this is a safe thing to do?
Yeah, I think their plan is to raise the entire site except for the wetland areas by 4 feet, which is an incredible amount of stuff that they're going to have to bring in there to do that. And the way that they want to manage it is if stormwater comes in from Chelsea Creek or Belle Isle, it will flood that open green space they have in the middle of the site and then drain back out to Belle Isle as the surge goes down. And this is like looking out for 6 or 8 or even more feet of storm surge on top of a very high tide.
Mm-hmm.
So they do seem to be thinking about that and how they can safely manage.
Yeah, and also including other uses for the sites around where they're actually improving in terms of, as Alex just said, the stormwater drainage, considering storm surge and sea level rise, and also we would love to push for the daylighting of the Sales Creek, but that would require also the cooperation of the property owners on the Chelsea Creek side. That's not, that's something that we really need to push for. But the fact that they will be sort of improving, not necessarily daylighting, areas of the creek that run through their site, I think is a big plus for us. And also creating like an amphitheater, they have a rendering. I'm not sure, if how accurate it would be, but they have renderings that include, other uses for folks, like whether it's, increasing a greenway aspect where people are now able to use these areas next to these, these creek sort of areas. And that's a big plus as well. As far as daylighting the actual Sales Creek, I mean, that's probably more of a long shot because, again, it runs through under the oil tanks.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I have to say that Tom O'Brien has expressed an interest in, engaging more with the oil companies, and a few of us in East Boston have quarterly meetings with the oil companies, and we see an opportunity to really make sure that they're having that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the community somehow acts as a broker in some ways. We have an advantage
and be helpful.
Right.
Yes,
and you're right. That's a way for the community to engage with people who have been sitting at the business roundtable for instance, for the Chelsea Creek Action Group. For many years now, the community people have established a working relationship with the oil companies, with the Coast Guard, with the shipping companies that use the Chelsea River and the Chelsea Creek. And so that provides another opportunity for community people to be engaged in a very important area of concern around the development. There still hasn't, to my knowledge, but because of vision issues that I'm having right now, I haven't been able to see how they've addressed the C1. They they did talk about the old plan of putting a thing at the corner of Boardman Street and C1, which would create sort of like an overpass to let people not get stalled at Boardman and C1 and have them be able to do a flyover, is what I think they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been on the table for a lot of years. I don't know whether that's a part of this plan, although Tom probably has looked at that opportunity already. But that's a concern that I have, is the C1 connection.
We see.
So HYM has said they don't want to build the flyover, and they're planning on just doing surface-level improvements for 1A. So I think the traffic impacts are going to be a major thing for the neighborhood to think about. Sales Creek actually will be open and accessible on the site. It runs from the northwest corner down to Belle Isle, which is a great thing, but I think making sure that it gets connected to Belle Isle so that people can actually go there is really important.
Yeah, I agree, Alex. Agree, yeah.
So what about the construction time impact on the neighborhood? This is a humongous construction, right? A lot has to, and you just talked about a bunch of soil having to be brought from outside to raise the entire land. Do we know how that's going to work?
I don't know right now. I think a lot of it is like very preliminary. They're just talking about building out the phase one parcel.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of stuff hasn't even been touched on yet, even with like the 460-page filing that they've submitted.
That's pretty long. When are you going to finish reading it?
I haven't started yet.
I'm on like page 30. There's a lot of pictures in it too.
Oh, that's good.
The cooler?
All right. So I want to make sure that people have the information that they need to engage. And it seemed like both Magdalena and Marielle raised this concern about the simplicity or lack thereof of the channels for providing feedback. And hopefully that's one you can take back to the meetings as well, Alex. In the meantime, I'm wondering if the Impact Advisory Group is itself a means of communication. Can people talk to you? Can people talk to other folks on the IAG?
Yeah, I would encourage them to. I'm accessible and would love for people to give me input on things that they think should happen at the project site. The IAG does have that opportunity that we meet more frequently, and all the meetings for the IAG are also public. We have one tonight at 6 o'clock.
Oh, that's a difference, because the other IAG groups over the past several years have not been open to the public. That's a big step forward, Alex.
It is.
Good for you.
Yeah, and you should come to those meetings in addition to the public comment ones.
But it would be good to have the list of, I got access to the list of the IAG members a while back when they formed it, and I shared it with a few folks, but it would be great to have that as public information.
Is it public
group,
information?
Oh, yeah, it definitely has to be
public.
Well,
then in that case, let me just read it out quickly. Margaret Farmer, Joe Mario, Erica Copagreco, Eleanor Catino, Margaret Hammond, that's Meg Hammond, Roberta Markey, Joe Arangio, Deborah Cave, Ben Downing, Alex DeFronzo, Madeline Straczynski, Hernani DeRujo, Kathy Orlando, Claudia Sierra, and Anne Margaret Gutierrez. That's the impact of
this group they represent and what neighborhoods, because I know they each represent sort of different sectors.
Right, different neighborhoods and probably different concerns as well. So that's the group.
We can post that list
and
as
we
well.
Will post that list also. Check, look for it on whatsapp.com along with the recording of this segment. So, Alex, did you want to add anything to what's coming up? I think we talked about today there is a community event, and that's happening at Suffolk Downs at 6, right?
That's right.
And January 8th, the MIPA event is also at Suffolk Downs.
Yeah, that's at 6 o'clock. They will have a scoping session, which is like different city and state agencies can ask the developer questions that they have. The mm-hmm. reason they're doing this is because they're looking for essentially accelerated approval.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a lot of different people there. You get a good broad overview of what the environmental impacts will be. That meeting is at 6 o'clock at Suffolk Downs, and they'll be doing another walking tour of the site.
So anybody who's concerned about the environment in particular should go to this one, because MIPA is doing this.
Or if they can't, try to connect with the folks that are going and perhaps get a report back.
Well, no, who do we know who's going?
I'm going to try to go, but I can't promise. I mean, okay. Some of the folks, maybe Chris, Alex, you'll probably be there, and some other folks, some of the IAG members.
Okay.
The other piece of that is the people who attend that meeting, whether they're IAG members or just members, community residents, in my opinion, it's very important to impress upon the people from NEPA how concerned and how informed the community is, both at the IAG level and at the general residential
level.
So
do you think, Mary Ellen, that if like a common person shows up and speaks, and that will have that weight, or do you think that they're going to look to an IAG person to speak on behalf of the community?
No, I don't think they'll differentiate between IAG and the ordinary resident. I'm talking about NEPA.
Right.
The city might do that, but traditionally, NEPA has not been really responsive to the community. And in the end, you know, they almost rubber stamp the position of the developer. So in this case, because the IAG is large, it's very well known now, and the meetings will be open to the public. I think it's important for the NEPA to get the idea into their heads that the community is very involved in this development.
How do we achieve that?
Well, we should live stream it. That's something I wanted to add, because we have live streamed the MEPA meeting with the airport expansion of Terminal E, and it was really helpful. A lot of folks were just really, really grateful that they couldn't be there, but they could watch it from their computer and
but
listen to
the
comments.
But from MEPA's perspective, to see that the community is serious about this, wouldn't it be
that
simply...
That has to be emphasized. We're in now an election year for governor, and Matthew Beaton, the Secretary of Environmental Affairs, has to receive the notion that the community, this is a community slanted development, and the community has been involved from day one, because the developer has reached out and had reached out immediately.
That's what I'm wondering. How do we convey that to MEPA, you know, short of 100 people showing up at the meeting?
I think you need to extend the involvement by immediately presenting at the meeting different ways of communicating, as Alex described, via the computer and via notes, and emphasizing to people that they have to write their opinions or communicate their opinions in one matter, or in one way or another. And for NEPA to understand, pointing to the people who are representing NEPA, saying those are the people who are going to be making the decision, and they are responsible to the governor whose election is coming up this year. Now, I know that that's overt political, political organizing technique, but it's one that works. If you point out the people who are going to make the decisions, then they have to feel more responsible to the community as well as to their boss, the governor. So I think completely emphasizing that responsibility that they have and who they are is a way of getting them to accept the responsibility of their decision making. They're usually in the shadows, you know, you don't usually see. They might send a representative to a community meeting, but there's not always an acknowledgement of who they are and what power they have over the development.
You're talking about MEPA.
I'm talking about MEPA now, and then at some point the city, I keep forgetting what those new
BPDA.
Initials are. The BRA. You might want to point out Mr. Golden, who's the head of that agency. And if he attends a meeting, and this is a huge development, so I assume he'll be there along with others of his Latin school alumni. And that's another way of connecting. You know, you say, Golden went to Latin school, all you Latin school people, communicate with him. All the people who are connected to some city councilor or the mayor, point out to them that they have to connect to the VRA. And, you know, it's humanizing the people who are who have the job of approving the projects at different levels. And I think that's important because usually people don't know who they are. They don't know who they're writing to. They don't know exactly what the responsibilities they have. And so I think that's very important, turning around the agencies that have control over this development, whether they're politicians or they're agencies within the city or the state. That is not always clear. In most cases, it isn't clear who the people are that you're writing to or calling up or are just gathering around.
I'm looking at the invitation from MEPA, and I think that the only way you can communicate with them
is via email.
Yes. Is via email. Yeah. If you don't actually go to the meetings, with like the January 8th meeting that they're convening, if you can't be physically present, then you have to send an email, and yeah. I do have that email address in the email, so I could.
Again, we should centralize the information.
Yeah.
So we should centralize the information. Each of us go back to our respective groups and mediums. I do always push for social media. A lot of the community groups have, email listservs. They have a Facebook page or a group. They have Twitter accounts. So there's multiple avenues where we're going to have to move a little bit quickly right now and unfortunately scramble.
Yeah.
But if we need to scramble, let it be, because we really want to make sure that
that's
the information gets out as much as possible to provide comments. Yeah.
Right. So, Alex, any final comments? We got a couple of minutes.
Sure. I think we've talked a lot about MEPA, the scoping session that MEPA is going to do. To me, the most interesting thing that's likely to come out of that is an agreement that HYM might make with the MBTA for building improvements to the Suffolk Downs stop and to the Beachmont stop. They have
that's
a lot
already
of
being being done in the background.
I think a lot of the stuff that they're likely to talk about at the scoping session is going to happen no matter what. It's sewer improvements, permits they have to get from the MWRA, the Mass DEP, those sort of things, I think, given the size of the project, would have to happen no matter what, unless they were just to leave it as empty open space. So I think it's really important for people to get engaged in the BRA, now BPDA process, to make sure that the overall vision that HYM has presented for the project makes sense to people in the neighborhood. So these buildings that they're going to put on the site are like 12, 14 stories tall in some places. It's a huge development.
Mm-hmm.
So I really want to emphasize.
Where on the site are those two buildings going to be, Alex?
The phase one part of the project is right next to the Suffolk Downs stop. It's right on the Orient Heights side of the project.
Yeah. And let me interrupt and say this right now. I think that one of the agencies or the developer or all together should listen to this this broadcast and hear you, Alex, and how informed you are, how articulate you've been on the issues. You have an overview of the project and you have a very acute grasp of what the issues are from a community perspective, but you also know from a developer's perspective because you've met with him and you have, described them to us on this broadcast. I think that the agencies would be well served if they hired you on as a community coordinator for this whole project. It would benefit the community, it would benefit the developer, and it would benefit the environment and the business climate. I think you have a very, just from listening to you respond here on specific issues, if anyone from the developer, from the city, from the state is listening or will listen, they should heed my advice and pick Alex DeFranzo up as community coordinator, because thereby all of the information, all of the different processes would be much more accessible to the community, and it would enhance the project from a developer's point of view and from a city and state point of view. So that's my editorial right now.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. That's a great vote of confidence. Alex, you got another job.
I'm honored that you said it, Mary Ellen. I'm busy running the sailing center down here, but I agree with you that it's important that we have somebody that's coordinating so that the IAG is not, taking on all of the work of making sure we have one unified thing where we can really
and
get
together
what the neighborhood
wants. That whole concept is not a new one. And over the years, there have been projects where the proponent has funded either consultants for the community or a coordinator for the community because, as you just said, the community is all an all-volunteer component. And as Magdalena said earlier, a lot of people have family issues and can't make every meeting, especially at night, and during the day they have other jobs. So it is not at all unusual for a developer to provide the community with either funds or a person as a coordinator or consultant. So, I mean, just
Thank you, Mary Ellen. And I think that's...
I'm hopeful that the IAG will ask for that from HYM so that we have one person that's really facilitating for the community.
Right. So we will have other folks from the IAG on this show as well in the coming weeks and months, and we'll talk to all of them to get their perspective and to give them our perspective on how the community should be engaged on this wonderful opportunity, which does come with some risks and how to mitigate that. So I like that word of confidence that you gave, and I want to thank Alex for, first of all, being on the show, but also serving on the IAG, and I want to thank all IAG members for doing that. I want to thank my guests, Magdalena Ayed. Thank you, Magdalena.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, as always.
And Mary Ellen Welsh.
De nada, Nino.
And Alex DeFranco.
Thank you for having me on the show, Connor.
Thank you. And as I said, you will hear the recording and all the URLs and other kinds of email addresses and dates that were mentioned on the show on whatsupeastie.com. Thank you, everybody, and Happy New Year.
Stay safe.
Buon Capodanno.